Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to PhillyFanatics.com's Philly Sports Talk. I am Eric Fisher here at a special time on this Sunday, 5 p.m., and the 76ers are on the clock. That's right, 1 month from tomorrow, which will be Monday, if you're listening to the show live or if you're listening later, it was this past Monday. 1 month from Monday, NBA draft. 76ers get the first pick in the draft, having won the NBA draft lottery this past Tuesday. Draft lottery holds to form. No teams move up. No teams move down. It's exactly the order of finish, with some teams obviously having traded into spots like the Celtics, who will get the Nets selection at number three. But the Sixers have the top pick. They also have two picks later in the first round. Let's not lose sight of that, 24 and 26, which they get from the Heat and from the Thunder, respectively there, 24 from the Heat, 26 from the Thunder. And the two consensus number one picks, or potential number one picks, are Ben Simmons and Brandon Ingram. And you have right there two different players. It'll be really interesting, the Sixers do. Ben Simmons, who's listed at 6'9", 6'10", he's 240, 245 pounds. He does everything. He's sort of a point forward. He almost plays like a point guard, but he's obviously much larger. A great skill for a guy his size. A terrific passer. Concerns about attitude in the sense that, not that he doesn't work, but a little bit of a prima donna, according to some people. But let's not even go there. Let's just go with his game. Let's go with his game. And that is, he is a terrific passer. He's a terrific. He's terrific skills with the basketball. He's a really good rebounder as well. He doesn't just play on the perimeter. He just cuts, drives to the hoop, dishes off. And yet LSU didn't make the NCAA tournament. So you do have some questions on how good he is. But of course, and then the big thing is he's 19 years old. There's a Brett Brown connection with his dad, but we'll get back to that in a little bit. The other guy, 18 years old, although he'll be 19 by the time the season starts, and that's Brandon Ingram. And he is he was a freshman at Duke this past year. And Ingram doesn't quite have the ball skills or the rebounding that Simmons does. He doesn't have quite at that level. He's not the physical specimen. With him, while Simmons is really monster, 6'9", 6'10", 240, 245, strong guy. Ingram, the question is his body going to catch up to the NBA or how long will it take? He's 6'9". Seen his weight listed at 195, seen it listed as 200. He obviously needs to get stronger. But again, he's not going to be 19 until September. But he's a terrific shooter. And that's what he's really good at. He can create his own shot on the perimeter. He can play inside a little bit, not in a power game, but with moves around the basket. So Brandon Ingram is a guy who also could be the number one pick. And it seems that the Sixers are getting one of those two guys, Ingram or Simmons. And they both bring different things to the table. I mean, the Sixers really could use everything they got. Ingram, the outside shooting, the Sixers could really use a guy who could shoot from the outside, create his own shot, especially a forward that could do that. Covington in streaks does it, but certainly the guy you'd love to have do that. Again, the question is his body physically going to hold up? And who's he going to defend at the other end if he's that light? He is a pretty good defensive player in the sense that he blocks shots. And he blocks shots on the perimeter, too. Blocks shots inside sometimes. Also really good getting out and blocking shots on the perimeter. But his defense certainly leaves, something to be desired. And quite frankly, so does Ben Simmons' defense, despite his size. Both guys, as most young players do, have questions on the defensive end. If you look at Simmons, you say, how's he fit with the Sixers? He's going to dominate the ball. You'd think he'd have to. To be effective, the question mark with him is his shooting. He's not a good outside shooter, and I think I'm being fair. But you want to look at it and say, well, neither was Magic Johnson, and neither was LeBron James wasn't a great outside shooter when he came to this league. And they developed those shots. Magic Johnson was good enough that you had to respect it. Will Ben Simmons develop a good enough outside shot that NBA teams will, have to respect it and not just play off him and make him shoot from outside, give him that option to shoot from outside from long range? Time will tell. If he develops that shot, he's a heck of a player. Like an impact player, heck of an impact player at the NBA level. If he can develop an outside shot, He is an impact player at the NBA level, and I'm not going to call him LeBron James, but, you know, I'm not putting him in that class yet. But I think in terms of style, you know, a powerful guy, a good rebounder, maybe a better passer than LeBron is, although LeBron's not a bad passer. And what LeBron did as the years went on was he got a better outside shot, eventually became a little better shooting that shot in clutch situations. And LeBron made himself into a really good defender when he wants to be. And so, I mean, sometimes he's a terrific defender. And he wasn't that way when he came into the league. So Ben Simmons, you look at it and you go, you know, is he going to follow the same path as LeBron James? And again, I'm not putting him in the same class, but where, you know, his deficiencies are similar to LeBron's when he came in. And you know, he's going to fill that out. He's going to make those outside shots, make teams come out and respect him. I'm not even talking about three-pointers, just, you know, 18 to 20 feet even, 15 to 20 feet making those shots. Teams have to respect him. Gives him a more leeway to drive to the basket because teams got to have to respect him and come out and cover him. And they can't just sag back and you know, try to cut off his drives. You know, and Brandon Ingram, is he gonna grow into that body? Or, you know, is that body gonna grow into an NBA body? Great shooter, but, you know, is he gonna be just a strictly perimeter player? Now that wouldn't be the worst thing for the Sixers, where you got a logjam inside with Okafor and you know, Nerlens Noel, neither of whom really can play the traditional four spot. Joel Embiid, if he plays, and I'm always gonna say if he plays until we actually see him play. You know, he can shoot from outside a little bit, but he's an inside player for the most part. And Ingram would be a nice complement to that. I mean, think of Okafor down low, posting people up. If teams can't come down and double him because he can kick the ball out to a fellow Dukie, since Okafor also played at Duke, you know, and have Ingram hit that outside shot, I mean, that could be a lethal combination. But, again, there's real question marks in this game. And with both guys, with both of them, the thing you have to think about is they're 18 and 19 years old. And like I said, Ingram will be 19 by the time the season starts. That's really young. Don't expect too much from these guys. Like I said, you know, Simmons you might see more of in the first year in terms of what he can do, just because he already has that NBA-type body and you know, and can drive and do all that stuff. You know, don't put too much on the first-year player, on the rookie. They're not going to – you know, they're not going to turn the Sixers into a playoff contender. But if both guys could fit, like I said, Ingram explained how he could fit with the perimeter shooting, blocking shots on the perimeter, opening things up inside for Okafor, and you know, vice versa, Okafor's inside game opening things up for Ingram shooting outside. And Ben Simmons certainly could drive to the basket and dish off to the big guys to around the basket, to Noel going up for his favorite, a little lob dunk. That he runs really well with Ish Smith, you know, dropping off to Okafor for an inside basket or in good position. So both these guys, you know, Sixers have so many needs. You can say both these guys fit their needs. Whether they pan out or not, I don't know. But the Sixers are the one that have to make the choice now. Is it going to be Ben Simmons or is it going to be Brandon Ingram? They have 1 month from Monday to make that decision. There's some talk, and let's go through the NBA draft real quickly. Some of it is similar. Like I said, it's just right up. You have the Lakers second. So the one downside for the Sixers in the draft lottery is with no team switching places. If the Lakers had fallen out of that top three, the Sixers would have gotten their pick, and the Lakers did not fall out of top three. They stay at number two, so the Sixers will have to wait till next year maybe and get the Lakers pick. The Celtics at number three, which they got from the Nets. And then there's some talk of the Celtics offering that number three pick, and I'm not sure how this rumor got started, although there were some, Bill Simmons made some comments on it, but I don't know if there was some truth to it before that. Although last year, if you remember during the year, there was some talk of a trade with the Celtics and the Sixers for Jahlil Okafor. Would the Celtics trade the number three pick for Okafor, and would the Sixers do it back? Interesting question. Which would give the Sixers the first and third picks in the draft. Phoenix Suns, four. Timberwolves 5, New Orleans 6, Denver 7, which they got from the Knicks, Sacramento 8, Toronto 9, and Milwaukee 10. But let's not forget the Sixers have that 24 and 26 pick. At this point, I think it's kind of throwing darts to try to pick who the Sixers get. But one guy, they could be available there. It depends on which draft stock, you know, guys stock rises and falls and all that stuff. And that is DeAndre Bembry from St. Joe's, who's a pretty good, versatile, small forward. His game's got to get better for to be at the NBA level, but he looks like he has the skill set that can make him a really good small forward in the NBA. And that someone to watch if he does fall down to the Sixers stand at 24-26, where they have two picks. By the way, the Celtics, I should point out, the Celtics, in addition to that third overall pick, they have the 16th overall pick, which they got from the Mavericks, and they have the 23rd pick. So the Celtics are going to pick three times before the Sixers pick their second pick. Sixers go first, and then Celtics go 3, 16, 23. It'll be really interesting to see what they do there, if they keep all those picks, if they try to trade around, or if the Sixers try to package that 24 and 26 pick to move up in the draft. That's also a possibility. So the Sixers are not, you know, without getting the Lakers pick, they're not going to trade out of the top of the draft for sure. But they might be active later on in that draft with the 24 and 26 pick. Like I said, we'll find out 1 month from today. And Sam Hinkie, they don't have all those second round picks. By the way, the Celtics also have the first pick in the second round, which they got from the Sixers via Miami. So, this is Sam Hinkie's gone. We don't have six picks in the second round this year. In fact, I don't think the Sixers have any picks in the second round, if I'm not mistaken. I'd have to check that, but I don't think they have any picks in the second round. They've traded a couple picks. New Orleans gets one of their picks. I'm looking at it now. The Celtics get one of the picks the Sixers had. So the Sixers have moved some people around, but they don't have any second-round picks. So the Celtics, by the way, have a bunch. Boy, the Celtics pick have three picks. The Celtics have six picks in the top 45 picks. So there's also the first pick of the second round, the fifth pick of the second round, and their own pick. That's not even their own pick, the 45th pick in the second round. Then they have a pick 51st. So the Celtics have seven picks in the first 51. They also pick later on, way down at the bottom of the second round. So they have a ton of picks. You got to think that they're not going to – all those guys aren't going to make the roster. So you have to think the Celtics are going to trade some of those guys away. If they have to. That could be – who would benefit from that? And we'll see what happens. They could trade up or down. So interesting thing while we're watching the draft, the Celtics might be an interesting team to watch after the Sixers make their first pick and hang on and see if the Sixers move around in that first round with those two later picks. But we'll see. Interesting things about the Sixers. I got a little more on the Sixers later on. But let's switch gears to the Phillies. I worried about this in my Phillies notebook last week. They're kind of winning. I don't want to say they're winning with smoke and mirrors because I think that's unfair. I think they deserve credit for what they're doing, and they're winning with determination. They're winning with timely hitting. They're winning with really good pitching. But they're just not scoring a lot of runs. And, they went from the first inning of Friday night's game against the Braves. The Braves were the worst record in baseball, and the Phillies didn't score against the second inning today. So they went two full games, basically, without scoring a run against the Braves. They lost 7-1 Friday night. The only run was on a Ryan Howard RBI on a ground out. Ryan Howard, who was hit below, he's hitting 091 in May. I don't know what they're going to do with him. Keep playing Tommy Joseph, I guess, but Tommy Joseph went 0-for-4 today with a strikeout. We'll see how he does. Ron Ofer on here last week predicting Tommy Joseph wouldn't be long for the major leagues. He might be just because they don't have anybody else to put there. But Ryan Howard, like I said, doing all the right things. Still a power threat, but 0-91 in May, and it doesn't look all that. Remember, he's not even playing that much against left-handers, and so that's disturbing thing. But anyway, let's look at the team as a whole. Losing 7-1 Friday to the Braves with the only run scoring on a ground out in the first inning. They get shut out, two-hitter Saturday, 2-0 by the Braves. They do come back with a 5-0 win today to avoid what would have been an embarrassing sweep. But the Phillies are doing doing well, and we talked about this a lot last week. You got to be pleased with what they're doing. You have to, like I said, I'm enjoying the ride. I'm not, my criticisms of them are just pointing out that this team is not a playoff team. I don't care what the record is, and the record's impressive at this point of the season. Not many teams have more wins than they do. They were briefly, if not percentage-wise, in terms of games back, tied for first place last week after taking 2-3 from the Marlins. But let's not fool ourselves. This isn't a first-place team. They don't score enough runs. And we're going to get a real test for the Phillies coming up. And looking at their schedule, and you can never tell what's going to happen. I mean, nobody thought they were going to, almost get swept by the Braves or lose 2 out of 3 of the Braves. So you can never tell. It's a team that they swept. It's a team they took 2 of 3 from down in Atlanta a week and a half ago. You can never tell, but if you look at the schedule coming up now, they're playing the Tigers, who aren't setting the world on fire for sure, but the Tigers on the road Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Then they face the Cubs, who are setting the world on fire, next Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They follow that up with a series against the Nationals back here at home. They do sneak the Brewers in there for four games, and then they get the Cubs again back here in Philadelphia, and then go back on the roads to face the Nationals and the Blue Jays, come home and face the Blue Jays. In other words, some people ask, are the Phillies for real? And I'm not sure that's a fair question, but I think you're going to get a better gauge of what this team can be or what it will be for the whole season. They got off to this terrific start, interesting, but if they don't start scoring more runs, if they don't start getting more offense, and I don't know where that's going to come from, your pitchers can't throw shutouts every game, and your pitchers can't limit the other team to one run every game or two runs every game. You do have to score runs at some point, and their lineup just doesn't do it. And maybe they're getting, and I think they're getting everything out of their lineup they can for the most part. I don't think a lot of guys would go, they're underachieving. It's just not that good. And the pitching's been terrific, which is what has helped them through. Their defense, to give credit, has been pretty good. I know Franco made two errors on Friday night, but, it led to 300 runs total off of Aaron Nola. But defense has been really good, pleasant surprise. We talked about this a lot last week, what's making the Phillies. But I think, and like I said, it's almost unfair, but I think if you want to see if they're for real, a good barometer on what they're going to do the rest of the year is to look at what happens these next couple weeks. This little road trip here with the Tigers and the Cubs, and then they come home, the Nationals, the Brewers. Luckily, the four games are with the Brewers. And then three games with the Cubs, and then back on the road for the Nationals and Blue Jays. Then they face the Blue Jays again. And then just running out the rest of the month, by the way, where I want in June. The Diamondbacks, Twins were not very good at all. And then on the road, West Coast trip, Giants and Diamondbacks. So I think we'll have a pretty good gauge at the end of June. I mean, if the Phillies are still up at 500 or over that, hey, maybe they are that good. Maybe they are a 500 team or just a little bit better. I'm a little skeptical. Like I said, unless they find places to get offense from that I don't see, I'm a little skeptical of that. And I'm worried the pitchers can't continue to be as good as they've been. And even just a little slip from the current level could lead to a really bad, stretch for them. So, anyway, we have a caller on the line. It might be Gordon. Is that you?
Gordon, how are you, Eric?
I'm doing good, Gordon. How are you?
Okay, just got back from Penn State, enemy territory.
You know what, Gordon? Although we did not see each other, I just got back from Penn State a couple hours ago. So
no kidding.
Although I wasn't downtown for very long. I was only there for about an hour and a half, but I was just outside of Penn State, so we should have done the show from out there.
We could have, yeah.
So let me come back to, I just finished up with the Phillies, but let me come back to the Sixers. Do you have any opinion here on the Ben Simmons versus Brandon Ingram first round? They do have a month to make this decision, but do you have any feel on what's going to?
Yeah, I've kind of gone back and forth on it. You can't really go wrong with either guy that has special talent that you can build a franchise around. I was just thinking Simmons all along, but the more I've been breaking it down lately, I'm leaning more towards Ingram for a couple reasons. He's a year younger. So if you look at two guys that you can't really decide between, they're kind of, they each have their own strengths and weaknesses, but they kind of come out like you're really kind of splitting hairs as to which one's better right now. But the guy who's a year younger, when you're talking about 18 or 19, there's not much, there's a huge difference sometimes in development between an 18-year-old and a 19-year-old. Much different than, say, a 26-year-old and a 27-year-old. At that point, there really isn't much difference. But, there's a lot of growing to do yet with Ingram, especially with his physique. He has a lot of filling out to do. And he just seems to have a better attitude on the floor. He likes to play both ends of the floor. He enjoys playing defense. And he brings an element to the Sixers that they desperately need, as a real guy, as a dangerous threat out on the wing. Simmons has a lot of special skills as well. You can't go wrong with Simmons, and if they end up taking him, I'll be fine with it. It's just that if Darius Saric is coming over from Europe, and it seems like all indications are that he is. I would be actually surprised if he isn't. Their skill sets are very similar. There might be certain things like running the floor and things like that that Simmons does a little better, but you know, there might be things that Cyrus does a little better, like, you know, banging inside and that kind of thing. But basically they have sort of that point forward kind of thing going for them that, you know, Cyrus does some other things over in Europe. He plays a little power forward, but from what I'm I haven't seen him play a lot, and who has really. But from what they say, how he projects in the NBA is more that, you know, Tony Kukoc, point forward kind of type player. So you would have, if you took Simmons and you brought Saric over, you'd almost have a duplication, and you really have that need of a guy who could really light it up, as a three, you know, like Ingram can. Covington gets that to you every now and then, but not really, you know. It's a big step up from Covington to kind of top end, of Ingram where he could max out. So I am leaning a little more towards Ingram if it were my choice, but I'm okay with either one, and I'm just glad that they ended up with the number one pick and they get to make that decision.
Yeah, I said this earlier, the good thing is the Sixers need both. I mean, they have so many needs that Ingram obviously fills that outside shooting need. He can create his own shot. He's a really good perimeter defender, blocking shots. And certainly, you know, if they keep Okafor, you have the inside-outside Duke combination there where, you know, Okafor, it should open up outside shots for Ingram, and vice versa. Ingram shooting should open up a little bit inside for Okafor. So you're right, that works. And I hadn't gotten into the Saric part. I'm glad you brought that up. But Simmons, you know, has the NBA body already and is a really good rebounder. Right, with Ingram, there's the question, of course. But you're right, there are some attitude questions with him. And I brought that up. I just kind of touched on it, but I floated off it. But you're right, sometimes on the defensive end, it looks like it's not there. And, Gordon, were you disappointed? I know he doesn't have a great team, but he didn't seem to rise to the occasion, you know, in big games and score a lot of points. Like, where you wanted him to see him score in their big games. And, you know, and they didn't make the tournament in part because of that. And, again, I'm not laying it all on him because obviously the team wasn't good enough. But is that a concern? Well, let me ask you, is that more of a concern than Ingram's 6'9", 195 frame, or is his frame, his strength a bigger question than Simmons' attitude?
I always feel, you know, an NBA, you're going to get in with professional trainers and you're going to have that natural filling out to do. It may be a problem for Ingram in his first year a little bit. But even after you draft him, there's a lot of time to bulk him up a little bit. So that doesn't concern me as much as Simmons. Sometimes if a guy has character issues, he has character issues, and you really can't, if that's just part of who somebody is, you know, and you bring up a good point in terms of big situations. The guy's young and he's from Australia. So you're in a new country and you're young and, you know, you're expected to carry a big program. I don't know how much you had around him at LSU, but you're expected to carry a big program far. But, he didn't seem to step up in a lot of big situations. And the great players, you know, they like to compare him to Magic Johnson and LeBron James and all those guys. You know, when the stage gets larger, you know, they rise to the occasion. So, is it there with Simmons? You know, it remains to be seen. Maybe it is, but... it seems like Ingram just brings a better mentality to the game. And yeah, don't forget the Sixers have stockpiled a couple of guys already, and you know, Embiid should be healthy this year, and they have Noel and they have Okafor. You know, they have some guys with blue chip pedigree already, so it's not like either one would be the first guy on the roster like that. So, It is splitting hairs. I mean, Simmons may have a little more going for him right now as a rookie. You know, he may have a better chance of winning Rookie of the Year. But is that really what you're going for? You want to have more long-term thinking. So, you know, that's why. You know, all that said, I think they're probably going to take Simmons. Brown knows his family. He used to coach in Australia. You know, there's all that going. If I had to guess, I'd say they will probably take Simmons. But I think if you really look at their roster and where their needs are, and that they are getting two guys in Embiid and Saric that are lottery players. I mean, they were taken in a lottery, and so you know, you can afford to take a guy who's a little, slightly more developmental, although I think he will be, you know, Ingram will be, certainly be productive right out of the gate, maybe not quite as productive as Simmons might be. But that, like I mentioned, being a year behind when you're 18 or 19, it's a huge difference at that age. So, you know, that's why I'm leaning towards Ingram. But, you know, if I had to lay a bet, I would say they probably were going to take Simmons.
Well, we'll find out a month from Monday. And like you laid it out there pretty well, Gordon, there's question marks on both guys. But, you know, they both should help. I'll tell you one thing, the Sixers will be better next year. I mean, there won't be any question about that. Could hardly be worse, nowhere to go but up. But I will caution, and I've said this as people keep throwing in, well, you know, Embiid's going to be here, and Saric's going to be here, and this guy. Yeah, there's only one basketball, and you can only really play one or maybe two centers at a time. And, you know, you can't even bring, you know, you can't just add on top of what they already have because, well, when Embiid's playing, that means either Noel or Okafor's not playing unless they trade one of them. So we'll see what happens. Gordon, before we get to final thoughts, I'm interested in your reaction to Sam Bradford's comments this week back with the Eagles. Did he accomplish what he needed to with what he said?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't as down on him as other people were to begin with. I kind of felt like I could understand where he's coming from. We don't know what was said behind closed doors. You know, the Eagles were kind of saying to him, we told him all along we were going to take a quarterback, but maybe that was like, yeah, we're going to take a young quarterback in a third, fourth, fifth round to develop, not they're going to trade up to take a guy at number two that, you know, it's a whole different ballgame, you know. So, you know, from what he was told, and he probably had the opportunity back when he signed with the Eagles, to sign with somebody else. You know, those windows all closed for him. You know, those windows of opportunity were closed by the time they tried to trade him around the draft. But, you know, back when he, you know, did sign with the Eagles, he may have had, one or two other options at least that he didn't take because he liked what the situation the Eagles offered him, you know, a chance to keep working with the guys like Matthews and Ertz and those type of guys. So I can understand where he was coming from, but I can understand where the Eagles are coming from. He's a guy who has been hurt, and, you know, you want to start with him. You have the what we're told is the ideal backup quarterback in Chase Daniel. I've never seen the guy throw a pass, but from what he's getting paid, his paycheck says he's the best backup quarterback in the league. And then you have this future franchise quarterback to develop. So on paper, in their minds, they have the best quarterback situation they could have. A competent guy, a very good backup, and your guy, you don't have to rush into action and experience David Carr syndrome right out of the gate. But you are dealing with personalities and egos and things were said, and who knows what was said behind closed doors. And maybe he really thought, yeah, they're going to add a rookie, but they're not going to add a rookie that's, you know, that they're going to trade the farm for and draft number two overall. There's a big difference between that and taking a quarterback in the third or fourth or fifth round. So I can understand from his own personal standpoint and his own future of his career how he must have felt. But obviously I can understand where the Eagles are coming from too. They, you know, he's a guy who's missed more games, 39, I believe, than he's won, which is 25. So, they have to. He's a short-term solution. Wentz is a long-term solution. And Daniel's the insurance policy. They set themselves up on paper very well at quarterback. But, you know, Sam Bradford hurt a little. But, you know, he took some time. And he came back in, and I think you're always good as your next pass and your next interception or your next touchdown pass or your next game. And, you know, I think we have a long way to go. We have training camp, we have preseason, and then we have the regular season. And I think slowly it'll be forgotten. So it was much to do about nothing, I guess. I could see where both sides were coming from.
Yeah, you know, I thought, except for the one misstep I thought he did was this past week was when he sort of put the onus on his agent, like, this is my agent's idea and the trade demand and all that stuff. I thought that was kind of a misstep. But everything else, I thought he handled it well. I thought he was pretty honest about, hey, you know, I know this is going to be Carson Wentz's team at some point. And, you know, I wish it had been, you know, I wished he had been the guy and that he was going to be the one to stay here and be the franchise quarterback. But, you know, he recognizes it. I thought I was fine with what he said. And Gordon, I agree it's not going to be a big deal. The only time I think it could be a factor is if he does not play well early in the season, Bradford does not play well, you're going to have the fans, that's when they'll remember this little, not coming to camp and stuff like that. And that's when they'll remember it. And that's when you'll hear the booing and the calls for Wentz. And I think that's the only way it's going to be a factor. Other than that,
he's going to have a tougher time. He's not at home, and he is on the road. Yeah.
Let me just sign off live. Thank you for listening, everybody. We're going to do final thoughts on the other side. And check out PhillyFanatics.com. Lots of great stuff up there right now and more coming. And that's it for this week's show live as we go into archive. Gordon, final thought? You lead off.
Okay, final thought. Well, you know, you look at every team that we have, all four teams, and, you know, the future looks really bright. You know, patience is going to be required. But, you know, the Eagles have, you know, I guess it's still a little hazy with a new coach. But, you know, you could feel kind of good that they at least have that franchise quarterback, and the odds of winning without a franchise quarterback diminished greatly. It's happened, but it doesn't happen very often. So at least they have that, and you know, we'll see where they build from there. The Sixers, I mean, like we talked about, there's a wealth of young talent. They're going to have to keep building from it. But, you know, it's hard to go wrong too often. It does happen with getting that many picks that high in the lottery that many years in a row. You know, some guys are going to get hurt like Embiid did, and hopefully he comes back healthy, and some guys don't pan out. And I think everybody has panned out for the most part. I mean, Noel's, maybe he's not great, but he's okay. And I think Okafor, if he gets his head screwed on straight, will be, you know, pretty good. And, so I expect them to take a step forward. The Phillies, I know you were probably talking about the Phillies earlier in the show. This may not be the exact lineup we see 2 or 3 years from now, but I think we're seeing, you know, certainly with the pitching staff and some other things, you know, what we're, you know, and some of the guys they have in the system, the Crawfords and guys like that, you know, you can kind of see it kind of really taking shape, kind of like you could in the early 70s of what would happen more in the mid to late 70s into their World Series championship in 1980. You can actually see it taking shape where it was so muddled for so many years, and that was so frustrating. So, and the Flyers, it's the last one I want to bring up. The Hockey News puts out a special edition every year of evaluate every team's system, and they do a, they list their top 10 prospects. They do the top 10, 50 prospects in hockey. They give everybody a grade, and then they rank them all, you know, top to bottom in the entire league. And I've gotten this every year, going back years, and the Flyers have gone from being ranked almost dead last in the 20s to in the teens. Now this year, I just picked it up, and they're ranked ninth. And I think they have four guys ranked in the top 50, including Provorov is ranked fourth overall as a prospect. And 51st was Moran. So, I mean, he just missed the top 50. So, you know, I think they're probably a blue chip forward prospect away from, you know, really being in the, maybe in the top five. And that's really a credit to, I think it's a big credit to Hextall. And, you know, so I think the future looks bright for the Flyers as well. So I'm feeling good. I'd really like to see an Eagles Super Bowl sometime in my lifetime. And I'd like to see another Flyers one because we just had the anniversary, their first cup this past week. And, you know, I'd like to see another. I was kind of young then, and I know you were too, Eric. So, you know, some of the other championships have come from the Phillies and the Sixers when we were a little older. And I wouldn't say no if one of those came down the line. But, you know, I think we could be looking, you know, if we're patient another year or two, we could be looking at some exciting sports in this town going forward.
Well, Gordon, if they can replicate the golden age of our youth with all four teams, even though the Eagles didn't win one, but you know, having all four teams in Super Bowls and you know, championships and finals and winning some titles from sort of that mid 70s through you know early 80s, early to mid 80s, that'd be or maybe we are up for that. That'd be an optimistic viewpoint. I hope you're right. I hope, you know, that's what we're building toward. That would be great. It'd be great for the younger fans today. It's kind of amazing that you and I at our age have not seen an Eagles championship, which is
It is amazing. Yeah. I thought I would see that before I ever saw Temple beat Penn State in football, but I've seen that first. So
There you go. You were Mr. Positive, so I'm going to come back to the negative side, and that is the 76ers, a team that has won, if my math is correct, like 47 games in the past 3 years. And my God, you'd think they were, you know, the new Jeffrey Lurie gold standard in the NBA. You'd think they were the Spurs, the way they reacted to, one, their draft pick. And Mike Silski wrote about that this past week. And I have to say, Mike and I are on the same page for the second week in a row. Last week, we were on the same page on Sam Bradford, two of the few defenders for Sam Bradford in this city, along with Mike Missanelli, Gordon, which was a really weird trio for me to be a part of with Mike Silski and Mike Missanelli. I don't know if that's ever happened on any issue. But the Sixers, you know, talked about the number one pick like they just won the NBA championship. They should be excited about it. Yes, they should be happy. You know, yes, they should be talking about, you know, help, it's going to help turn the franchise, you know, in the right direction. They won 10 games this past year. Like I said, they've won 47 combined in the past three. What we had to put up these past three, and then you have all these people where, see the process work. It's a disgrace what they had to go through the past 3 years. It's a disgrace what they put the fans through the past 3 years to get this number one pick. I don't want to hear them patting themselves on the back and self-congratulations about how smart they are and how great this is. And that wasn't even the thing that annoyed me the most this week with the Sixers. That was Mike Silski's column. What annoyed me, and it's my column on PhillyFanatics.com, was his self-congratulation on being the first team in the four major professional leagues to sell advertising space on their uniform. You would have thought that they invented a cure for cancer, the way they talked about themselves. Gordon, I'm going to read you the quotes from my column from Scott O'Neill, and this was off the Sixers release, putting that little 2x2 StubHub patch on the front left of their jersey. This marks another groundbreaking first for the Philadelphia 76ers and StubHub, Scott O'Neill, Sixers CEO. Our brands are now inextricably linked as we create lifelong memories for our fans in Philadelphia and around the world. Our partnership with StubHub continues to generate progressive and forward-thinking platforms created to improve the fan experience and advance our industry. The essence of our relationship with StubHub is our shared culture and ambition to innovate, which drives us to a reimagined traditional partnership activation and continually ask, what if? Gordon, I know it's my final thought, but can you tell me what the heck Scott O'Neill's saying there?
Yeah. It sounds like, you know, I'm sure we've all been through this in, like, high school and college when you forget you have a paper due the next day and you just say a lot of things that sound good and you hope you at least get a C on it. That's kind of what that sounds like to me.
Oh, my God. Yeah,
because it doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm not going to pick on the StubHub guy here, but I am. He refers to the Sixers as a beloved global brand. And he also talks about StubHub being a pioneer and innovator within the live entertainment ecosystem. I don't even know what a live entertainment ecosystem is. But the point is, no. You didn't enhance the fan experience. You didn't create lifelong memories. What you did, is you found another way to make money, and that's to sell advertising on a jersey, which to me was the last sacred thing in sports that you didn't sell advertising on. You know, you make money. You have all right. I got the plays of the game and the this of the game and the that of the game that detracts from the broadcast, and I understand that. You got advertising, you know, on the boards in hockey and on the ice. And, you know, along the front and front by the benches. And, you know, you got advertising just about everywhere you can put it. The one sacred thing was the jersey. But here's Scott O'Neill. He's talking about being jealous. His word, not mine. Jealous of the English Premier League teams. And talking about how NASCAR figured it out a long time ago. Yeah, Scott O'Neill wants to see the Sixers uniforms look like NASCAR outfits. The NASCAR stuff that the NASCAR drivers wear were, you know, it looks like somebody, like a five-year-old, took stickers of company names and stuck them all over them. You know, that's not what I want to see a jersey want to be. This isn't a good thing. Stop celebrating it and stop saying, like, you're helping the fans by doing this. What you're doing is you're finding new ways to make money for yourself, and that's okay. Like I said, I wish it wasn't the jersey. That bothers me. But stop self-congratulating yourself. Stop talking about how great it is for us. It's only great for one person. That's Joshua Harris, anybody else that benefits from the bottom line. It's not good for the fans. It's a desecration of the uniform. You know what? Just be gracious about getting the number one pick. Talk about how fortunate you are, and stop talking about how smart you are with everything. It drives me nuts with the Sixers ever since Harris bought the team. So on that note, I'm going to end, but you can tell I'm fired up about this. Thank you for listening to that rant, Gordon, you and the people listening on the show here. Thank you for listening to my anti-Sixer rant. Like I said, I really hope they do well, and I want them to do well. But that smug business attitude, I just can't stand it. And you know, I have to root for the team and against management. That's what I feel right now. So anyway, that's it for this week's show. Gordon, thank you for calling in. Appreciate it. next week we'll be back at our normal time, and we'll have more to talk about the Sixers, Eagles, Phillies, a whole lot more. Thank you for listening. Check out PhillyFanatics.com. For Gordon Glantz, I am Eric Fisher. Have a great weekend, everybody. And a great week.